the Cedar Hills Plan Commission dated Tuesday, February 27th, in Cedar Hills, Utah. I have, first item on our agenda is public comment. There will be a public hearing after public comments. I have one person signed up on the sign-up sheet.
Maybe I'll wait to the, I don't like hearing, yeah, I'll wait till you get the agenda item on your board.
Okay, so is there anybody who'd like to make public comment? We have 3 minutes to speak, whoever would like to speak it out. We will have, four separate public hearings, after the public comment period as well. For your first business topic, might be one in that public hearing. So you can either speak now, or you can speak through the public hearing. So say your name and address, please.
Steve Crowder, I'm 913 North 468 West Cedar Hills. Just wanted to call to your attention that Scott, we're here for, you know, citizenship and community, and talk to the member of our tree program afterwards. They may come up to you and want to set up an appointment to interview some of you guys. So get some more input from you. So that's all I want to talk about.
Very good. Thank you. We welcome the public. We oftentimes have empty chairs. I'm glad to see the chair being utilized today. So that's good. Any other public comment before we move on? So I'd like to recognize Jared Anderson as an alternate member tonight on the commission. The public's knowledge, we have two alternate positions in the planning commission. I don't know what the mayor or city council are doing about it, but if you had any desire just to serve, you could maybe raise your hand to the city council person or the mayor and maybe end up serving here. It's a great opportunity to serve once a month for a few hours and get a sneak peek into future comings and goings of things in the city. So, all right, so I'm going to close the public comment portion of the meeting. So I'd also remind our fellow commissioner to speak into the microphone, because we had some troubles with the recordings a little bit, but we don't talk close to the microphone. All right, so I'm going to open a public hearing. The first public hearing we're going to have is on topic of review recommendation on preliminary approval for the Wardell subdivision located approximately 9730 North Canyon Road. We did have a graphic up there a moment ago on this subdivision. Is there anybody here that is here to give a comment in public hearing on this topic? If not, then I will close the public hearing on the Wardell subdivision. Now I'll open the public hearing on amendments to City Code Title 10, Chapter 6A, Planned Commercial Development Project related to conditional uses in the SC1 commercial zone. Is there anybody here who would like to give a comment on this topic, this public hearing? If so, you may come up and state your name and address. You may have 3 minutes to write this session with us.
My name is Ted Davis. I live at 1794 North 940 East in American Fork. And I wanted to comment on your proposed development. Since I'm from American Fork, and that's the board I'll develop, could you pull up the map for the commercial zone?
Yeah.
That way you can see where I ended up. I live closer to this development probably than 9.999% of so if you look at that picture, that's actually the south side. The right side is the south side.
Right.
My home is directly south of that exit. So I live right there on the corner where he's pushed toward he's quickly to.
So you live east of the funeral home?
Yes. Right. I live right in one of the garages.
Right.
So, okay. In past years, there have been other developments that have proposed an entrance and an exit on that south side. And our little enclave of about 8 to 10 residents have always opposed that entrance and exit. We feel it's a commercial development and the developers should not push their commercial traffic down onto a residential road. We don't feel there's, maybe there's capacity, I don't know, but we don't feel it's right to do that. We also feel it'll increase the traffic on our road. Obviously, there'll be people coming from the south who will want to get into the residential development, and it'll increase traffic there. We don't want the traffic. Also, looking at the map, if a customer is going to leave that development and exit onto Utah County Boulevard and then go south, there would be almost no reason to exit out of that south exit. They could use that middle exit with not too much of a hassle to go south. I will say during rush hour and 5 p.m. Time frames, it's very difficult to go south on that road anyways because of the traffic. So my request is to the Planning Commission to consider blocking off that entrance and exit so it wouldn't impact the neighborhoods to the south. Also, I understand, if I'm correct in looking at both American Fork maps and the Utah County parcel map, that road, 1800 North, or I think it's 9900 North for Cedar Hills, is actually, the land itself is owned by Cedar Hills, but it is within American Fork city limits. So, to whatever degree we as residents can influence the American Fork city and mayor, city council and mayor, to exert any pressure on you guys to not have an entrance and exit there, we would do so. Our hope is that we don't have to do that, but that you would take into consideration the impact that having that entrance would have on our community. From what I understand, also from...
like 30 seconds.
Oh, no, I'm good. I don't want to push it too far.
Finish your last comment. You have one last comment.
Well, I just understood from previous residents of Cedar Hill that this entrance right here, that road, actually was a temporary road at one point. It wasn't supposed to exist, even. So I don't, and the residents in Cedar Hills, from what I've gathered from previous discussions with them, I don't know how to apply to this discussion, but they have not wanted an entrance and exit there. As I talked to them, they're against it as well. Thanks.
Is there anybody else that would like to give a comment in this public hearing? Just open up and state your name and address again.
Steve Brogan, 913 North 468 West, Cedar Hills. As I said, my house is the backyard borders the south end of that development. And so I concur with what Ted Davis just said about not wanting a, or not desiring an exit onto that street, or at least minimize as much traffic as we can on that street. We've already got quite a bit of traffic down there. It's not great. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? So I will close the public hearing on the City Code Title 10, Chapter 6A, Plan Commercial Development Project in the SC1 Commercial Zone. And I will open the public hearing on amendments to the City Code Title 10, Chapter 4B and 4F, related to accessory structures in the R1 50,000 and the RR1 20,000 rural residential zones. Is there anybody here that would like to give comment on this topic? By the way, young scouts, you're welcome to comment too, just so you're aware. So, all right, well, I will now close. You want to say something?
Yeah, I do.
Very good. Say your name and address, please.
So it's Ann Sumner, 3832 West Mountain Top Circle. Apologize, I'm not really prepared because I just found about an hour ago down here, but I don't really understand. What is the change? Like, what change are they doing on the...
Could you please state your name for the record?
It's Hank Sumter.
Okay.
So is this like, is the change, affect, like, how buildings on the property?
Exactly. I believe the topic we'll discuss more in the agenda, but I believe the topic is about giving residents the option based on their lot size Do you have a taller structure than currently?
I've been working on trying to build a shop, and that's been a concern of ours
right
up to this point. So,
right. I stated that right, Michael?
I concur.
Okay,
it's adding additional flexibility to your ability to build a taller.
That'd be great.
Is there any other comment in this public hearing? I will now close the public hearing related to accessory structures, and I'll now open the public hearing on amendments to City Code Title 10, Chapter 532, related to accessory apartments. Is there anybody here who'd like to speak in the public hearing on the topic of accessory apartments? Last time I waited, somebody actually thought they were going to say something. So it'll be a while. I think somebody's going to say something.
Sick test.
So, all right. So I'm going to close the public hearing portion related to accessory apartments. The first agenda item tonight is approval of the minutes from the January 23rd, 2018 Planning Commission meeting. Do we have a motion to approve?
I move that we approve minutes from the January 23rd planning session.
And do I have a second?
Second.
And before I vote, I just had a question. So in the minutes, there was a statement made that Chandler was going to deliver a link to the definition of affordable housing.
I'll send that to you.
Did that occur to you?
No, I didn't send it. I'll send it to you.
Okay.
I have it ready.
All right, thanks. All those in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. So the next item on our agenda is review recommendation on preliminary approval for the Wardell subdivision.
Before we get started, I passed out a packet of information from the Planning Commission regarding the Open Public Meetings Act. Please take the time to go through that and familiarize yourself with the rules of the Open Public Meeting. What you can't do, it's important for us to be able to say that each body, each commission, each committee received something from the city on open public meetings. So at some point through the year, should you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Mr. Wright, our attorney here, also is very knowledgeable on this, and he can also help you if you have any questions. So take the time, please read that. So today we're talking about a few things. First being the Wardell subdivision. This is probably one of the easiest subdivisions you can do. It's going from a one lot to a two lot. Both of the buildings already in existence. So you see, right now this is one partnership you have. So you have one lot, and this is currently a single family building, with the second building right here being an outbound building. With the construction that's going to be occurring on Canyon Road, that has been put out to bid. I believe that this morning the county awarded the bid, and construction, you should see construction shovels in the ground in just a couple of weeks. They're moving fast on it. As part of the construction on Canyon Road, they're going to be widening. This is Box Elder Drive heading east up the hillside there. They're going to be adding a kind of an acceleration lane right here. And as part of the project, the city has decided to place a sewer line along this portion of Canyon Road. The homes that are along there are currently on septic, and this allows them to connect to a sewer. We're seeing that a number of these homes in this area, they're about 30 to 40 years old, their septic system being the same age, and they're reaching their useful life, so we're starting to see a number of them fail. So in order to get ahead of some of these failures, where the city's laying the groundwork, putting in the sewer line, stepping up the laterals to the properties, and then allowing the residents as needed to connect their sewer lines when they see fit. So currently, Mr. Wardell has, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Wardell is in the audience. He's here to answer any questions if you have any that I can. He's got a current access off of Canyon Road, and he's approved the second access off of Canyon Road, it being County Road. They've granted him that access. And they're going to be putting in the sidewalk curb gutter along here alongside the front of his property.
Beyond that, there's, and then there's going to be a small, a slight dedication of land right here. There's a current existing wall, which we've said is okay to stay there. But, I mean, as far as the subdivision goes, probably don't get much easier than this one. But nonetheless, what questions do you have? Can I answer?
Looking at from this perspective, on the left side, the new structure, the outbuilding is going to be converted, I guess. Is that going to be?
Yeah, that's the setback. Is the setback
on the side of the back?
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe so. That's a commercial building.
Yeah, it's actually 15 feet from the property. It's
I think I asked this for the question.
Both properties are single family homes.
Correct. Correct.
And they meet
minimum. The side, he's in the, yeah, he is in the R1 15,000. I can't see that, but the.
It's a little more than 30.
Lot 1 is 34,000 square feet, and lot 2 is 15.9 thousand square feet. So, well over the minimum requirement.
So I was reading the city code relating to off-street parking. I don't see a garage associated with this project yet, anyway.
I'm not going for a building, not yet, but that structure, the plan is to expand, beautify, modernize it. And you'll see the entrance to that south lot. That was the point, is we'll put a garage, three-car garage out back.
So, that'll actually be addressed when the building plans are
correct, seen. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. It's not actually showing you the garage.
Yeah, there it is. Okay.
See, you thought it was easy.
Stand correct.
Any other questions or comments from fellow commissioners? I'll entertain a motion if you want to make a motion. So just to be clear, on the packet, so we are approving and disapproving the preliminary plan.
Correct.
Because right above it talks about approved concept plans. I think that's just
That's a carryover
from
last
week.
Or
2 months back, right?
I apologize for that.
So
the recommendation is to say preliminary, not conceptual.
Right. So, I just want to make sure people understood that.
No, but the motion is correct.
Okay. So, we have a motion?
I move that we approve the preliminary plan for Ward L subdivision.
I'll second. You're done?
I know.
You want to say subject to anything?
No. We didn't have anything.
Okay. All right. You're right. Well, we didn't ask you. We did have it wrong. Sorry, you seconded it, right?
I will second.
So, you sign up before you vote? Discussion? No? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay.
Thank you. Okay. And that will be on the city council agenda, I believe, the first meeting in March. So, go ahead and all right, now we've got the parts.
Okay. So, the next topic on the agenda is review action on a conceptual plan for property located approximately 9826 North County Boulevard in the SC1 commercial zone.
All right. So something to remember tonight is we are talking a conceptual plan. We're not talking a preliminary plan. And the approval for a preliminary plan, that's where you're going to approve your building elevations. You're going to approve a lot of the engineering, the details of the utilities, also the details of the traffic flow pattern. And I understand that this entrance on south here is a touchy subject. We've worked with the developer, and this is what we're proposing right now. And I know that there's not a lot of people that like that, but we'll get to that. But what we have here is the city currently owns this land, and we're under contract with a group from Open Shop Properties who would like to develop the property as you see here. Now, this is the west side. This is North County Boulevard, 4800 West. Currently, there are two right here and right here. There's two accesses onto the property.
that are UDOT approved, they're already staffed, they're already there. I don't believe that they're going to get any more from UDOT, so we're working with what we've got there. So you have that. On the actual concept, though, consists of some retail. You have two retail buildings right here, and you have four restaurant drive-through with drive-through capabilities along the front of that road. You have two office spaces. You have an indoor climate-controlled storage facility, and then you have an athletic club, like a performance training. So this is, we're going to get into the discussion of the general use of these in this zone in the next topic. But as far as a conceptual plan, I appreciate the willingness of OpenShot to make a few changes that from the initial presentation that they've given staff to now, they've made a number of changes, and I want to highlight those. One of the key features that we want to see in our commercial development is the ability to walk from one entity to the next. So we've had them put in sidewalks right here down the main corridor that will allow you to walk from one side of the property to the other without having to leave a designated walking area. Second, this access right here, with there being a limited amount of UDOT cutouts here, this piece right here is currently undeveloped. It's right next to it. It's just south of Parks. We don't want to landlock them, so we want to be able to keep traffic flowing anywhere within the commercial zone without having to come out on the 4800 and then come back in some way. So we had to do a cutout right here, and I appreciate their willingness to go through that. Some of the things that we're going to be looking at, and this is where I say it's a conceptual plan, it's not a preliminary plan, but we want to look at this roundabout. We want to make sure that it's the correct size and the fire apparatuses can get around it. We'll want to look at the distances from all these points to make sure that it's with that, once again, that the fire apparatus can find fire at any point in the building. We'll look at street lights, we'll look at fire hydrants, we'll look at sewer, we'll look at water, we'll look at how this is being fed on the utility side. So that's all coming in the preliminary packet. You see that they've identified a number of areas. That's what these ones right here. These are dumpsters for each site. So that's what those are if you have any questions. What kind of questions do you have on the map itself?
Let's do this a little bit organized fashion to start this anyway. So I was thinking that, Jared, if you're up to it, let's start with Jared and Stephen, Lorianne, Jeff, John, and myself. And then let's circle back and drill a bit additional. But instead of kind of all jumping around, I'm sure everybody has something to say. But why don't we start with Jared?
Sure. Chandler, I wonder what the minimum number of ingress and egress is for this type of a parcel, if you know.
What the available number?
No, required.
The code doesn't require a certain number of ingress and egress. The number of ingress and egress on 4800 is determined by UDOT. So they've given us these two cutouts. When they did, you may remember a number of years ago, maybe 6 years ago, they did reconstruction on 4800 North Point Boulevard. That's when we got these cutouts there on the west side. So those are kind of predetermined. So we're trying to fit the property and the design of the property around those two cutouts. There's not a requirement in code for any cutout. However, from traffic flows pattern, I feel like there needs to be a cutout. Now, whether that cutout is right here or whether that cutout comes down closer towards 4800, I feel like there, in order for Cedar Hills residents to access the property without having to go out on 4800 and back into it, I feel like an access there of some sort should be required. Now, whether that is a full access as shown right here, this is a full, go either way, in and out, or whether it's limited to a ride in, ride out to kind of direct traffic back out to 4800, I feel like it's something there needs to be something there.
And why a circle around about there in the middle?
Aesthetics.
Is there a functional purpose for that, or is it just?
I think it helps them meet their landscaping requirement. There is a representative from OpenShot Properties here tonight, Mark. I apologize, I didn't introduce you. So if I miss you, please jump on the side and hit the microphone. The code does require a certain amount of open space, green space for commercial development. So
how close to the 30% are
What is it?
I don't know the number. I have a couple questions about that because it's supposed to be net of roads, and so you've got to back out the amount of pavement that is going to be dedicated to the city. So there's a number there. And while I believe we're really close, because there is even a, this green strip in the middle is a city park that they're willing to dedicate and develop.
There are site tabulations on the right.
There are site tabulations on the right, but I have questions about how that's tabulated.
Yeah.
So where we're in the concept of the plan, I wasn't going to give too many headaches to them on that, but as a developer preliminary plan, that's where it becomes more critical.
Do I understand you correctly, if they do, if part of the property does become city property, or part of the park does not count?
No, the roads, it's net of the roads. So this green space right here that they would dedicate to the city would be part of the calculation, yes.
So Jerry, do you have any recommendations or suggestions?
No, those are my questions.
All right, Stephen?
I do have concerns about setbacks for the two larger buildings,
okay?
Because there's residential within.
So if you can imagine, just for the audience's sake, where this black line is, that's about where the property line is, and then there's homes right there.
And required setback for that is 100 feet?
No. Yeah. I believe it's 30 feet.
30 feet.
Well, it's 30 feet from property line to edge of foundation.
But that depends on the proposed use, though, right?
It depends on the use and size. So none of these buildings are higher than two stories. So none of these buildings are higher than any home that's allowed in.
Okay.
So the current code limits a building to 35 feet. Homes are also limited to 35 feet.
Right.
So once they start going past that 35 feet, once they start trying to do that third story, is when you start having some additional setback requirements there.
So a couple more things. So on the storage facility proposed,
okay,
building,
this building.
Currently the parking for that's quite small.
Yeah.
If for some reason that ended up being something besides storage facilities 5 years from now, is there provision in this to provide the additional parking? Is that what the buffer there is intended for?
That's a good point. So, and this Mark might jump up on me on this one, but storage facilities have very low parking needs, but you're right that this may not always be a storage facility. Well, as part of the storage facility, there is locked off, there is gated off, it's like almost like a gated community, exactly. So people can come in and access storage units and it's blocked.
Will those areas be paid?
Yeah. Watch this. But that should get revert to, let's say, people don't like storing things, and it goes dark, and then it becomes a neighborhood grocery store. You could repurpose this asphalt around it in order to be a park.
Well, that's still probably not going to be the grocery store park.
It would have to. They'd have to work on it, yes.
So that's one of my concerns, is that if that doesn't stay the proposed use, there is not adequate parking opportunity. Even if you redid that thing, but I don't think there's enough.
I think the only reason I push back on that maybe a little bit, and I like your point, I think it's something that needs to be explored, but I don't know that you necessarily need to plan for the max use here. Just because if that's the case, then any one of these other buildings could at some point revert to being a use that's other than its own and require a higher level of parking. So it's hard to say that one way or another, but it is something I think we can explore. You see this office building has a number of parking stalls, so maybe there could be
shared
parking agreements. They could also be that these blue dashes are phases of the project. They're also basically subplots, meaning that they're going to ultimately sell the plots in a way. So maybe that could be redesigned in order to accommodate an additional amount of parking that's needed.
And so we won't have to approve additional subdivision when they sell off those plats as part of this development.
Yeah.
I do still have a couple more notes. The two uses for the larger buildings are currently not zoned, are not allowed in that zone. So what would be our process to?
We're going to have that discussion next. So we're trying to do these in tandem.
While the public hearing on the topic.
What's that?
While the public hearing on the topic.
Yeah.
We could add it tonight.
That's a start of the process. I think I'm good for a minute.
Okay. So, you can come back to me too. Lorianne?
Okay, I have a few questions.
Okay.
And also for Mark, if you, since you were at that initial meeting at the beginning of the month, I thought we had talked about flipping those two buildings so that the one with the larger, the greater potential for traffic, train facility would be away from those homes and would be more to the north so that it would have less impact on those homes in the American Fork neighborhood as well as the corner ones on Cedar Hills. I thought we had talked about that, and you said the next time that we would see this, we would see that change.
I apologize.
State your name.
It's Mark Greenwood. I'm with ALM Engineering in Provo. Mr. Wilkinshaw apologizes. He's out of town today, and unfortunately he's on the beach somewhere. But I wish he was here instead. Anyway, we did talk about that, and as Chandler said, this is still concept. We still are open to making some shuffles. We've been talking to some of those people that have been looking at these units and their preference for location. This is where the current people who've got interested in the properties are preferring to be, but we can certainly take some instruction on making some adjustments.
I think with the high level concern that the residents are going to have, that if we could really see if they would accommodate that desire of the residents to not have that training facility be right next to those homes, because that is definitely going to have more traffic than the storage facility.
Well, one of the things that will be quite telling when we get into the preliminary stage of this, when we do those traffic routing patterns and see kind of how that traffic's mentioned, we'll be able to see if there's going to be a change based on whether they think that if we put those buildings to the north, those traffic patterns will adjust.
Okay. Yeah, but we were also saying that, maybe that train facility would be a little closer to Lone Peak over there.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's not that much closer, but it's an additional closer. It's right, they could catch that right on that street.
Sure.
And when I last saw this conceptual map, we were saying, God, that's really overparked to make these buildings could come forward. Because I never ever saw these two office buildings in the center there.
Yeah, the plan that we had before, we've gone through several plans, and some that you've seen, some of them before the time.
Right.
Had.
So I'm not surprised.
Yeah. So there's several. The first option we were looking for is we're trying to do a grocery in the back, and we started looking for tenants of that nature.
Right.
And we were really having some difficulty getting somebody to be that far back off the street. And so the last option I think you saw, we still had the training facility on the south.
Mm-hmm.
And we were looking at some of these options up here. It was a little bit different size building than that is shown up there. I don't know that it's critical one way or the other to the owners. If that's something that's definitely a preference to the city, I think it's certainly what it's for.
What kind of office buildings would these be? I mean, are they going to be the same?
Professional office.
Okay. My other concern was, of course, I saw the first floor in our cellars, the street cutout was actually in the center. It didn't meet either one of those two blocks.
Are you talking about 4800?
No, 99.
Uh-huh.
1900 more. So, you said, it was possible to move that, and you did, and you moved it to the east.
Right. So
that's also my concern, just maybe it would be closer. to the west.
There's a couple of technical issues that we're trying to address, and again, this is still something a little bit up in the air. As far as having access on a street, it's preferable that you can either line up the streets, where your drive access in the street on the other side would be identical, within 10 feet of side lines, or they should be over 120 feet or more beyond that. Something to that effect. It's very difficult to make a transition from the north to the south and be able to match into either one of those if you're going to have that kind of pass through. So the best option we can come up with that is to go directly in the center of those two accesses to the south, or could be slightly to the west. The difficulty there then is the proximity to the intersection. Sometimes on, depending on the traffic loads, which we don't know yet when we leave that area, if the traffic loads are too heavy, then you can't have it too close, access too close to the intersection without additional conflict. So you're trying to push it back to make sure there's still enough distance to the intersection. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but I would still see that we can see if we can get to the west or the other.
Can I ask a related question to some of that? What is that driveway to the north there? It looks like it's maybe inside of the gate or not part of the gate, or how is that intended to use?
Is that the storage facility you mean?
Yes.
There is a fence right there, and effectively, to kind of get to your parking question as well.
You're talking this right here?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think you're talking about the line that goes directly across the north.
Both.
Oh.
Yeah.
There was a street plan that came down through there at one time, and as I understood, it was a public street that was going to come all the way through the property.
Yeah.
In trying to soften that, we've gone to a simple driveway coming from a full public street into the driveway situation. You continue that same type of alignment based on what was already planned to do in the past. The line that was directly north of that building and the asphalt area around that is currently it's about 40 feet plus an additional 6, I think, in the sidewalk areas. It could be transformed into parking and a drive aisle around that with some minor modifications. The green area, and just to back up to some of the other questions that were asked before, the green area is represented with the landscape number that's on the sheet. I don't know if you can see it. It's showing 20% there, but it has not accommodated any of the roads. It's inclusive of everything there. So those numbers will need to be adjusted slightly to get to it.
I just have one other question about this. I want to talk about trying to get a grocer in, and it seems like these are huge buildings. I very much heard about this at 30,000 square feet, that's 35, and it was 38. And so then one gentleman at that initial meeting said, well, if it's grocery store, it'd be 45. Well, what we're talking about now is about 80,000 square feet. So the 45 wasn't already. But I know that we don't have a tenant interested for 45. But what I'm concerned about is it necessary that training facility be that big?
It's what they have requested. And that's the people that were interested in moving into there and acquiring that parcel. This is what direction they gave to the size of the building they would like to request.
Okay, that's always the big concern here.
Can I speak to that real quick? Our code speaks to a lot of different things. It speaks to the setbacks, speaks to the height, but it does not speak to less square footage limitation. So there's not a minimum threshold or a maximum threshold that they're trying to meet. So that's just something to keep.
Okay.
Anything else, Lori? Yeah. So I have a similar concern. Certainly concerned about access on the south side of the boundary. I wonder, we have the roadway that runs on the east side of the mortuary. Like that one right there, I wondered about aligning with that roadway, if that could be a right-in, right-out type access. Obviously,
we've had a number of discussions about this. I'll just tell you what the challenge they're facing is, and it's a hard thing to address. appreciate any ingenuity to look at it. So you have this access right here and on the north end of the property. We've always said that we want to be able to have people drive from one end of the property to the other and access the entire commercial zone from within the commercial zone. That's important. However, getting from this point to lining up with either this street or this street is problematic in that as you cut into this street, you start creating a problem for developing on the remaining portion right here. It becomes too narrow. As you build your road onto this one, all of a sudden you have this big road just traversing in the middle of your property where you need an anchor, then you might be splitting your ankle.
Yeah,
so that's kind of the discussion we've had. And then I don't think anyone's saying this is the way it is, take it or leave it. I don't think anyone's saying that. I think that there needs to be a lot more information. I think that there needs to be more options to explore. I really think that the traffic counsels, traffic studies, both from what they perform and then sending it to our engineers and having them review it, will be very indicative of what our final recommendation is.
Okay. And I don't know the answer either.
I don't know.
Moving west would be helpful, getting away from the residences. Just got a feel as well. Those footprints look really big. I know Walmart's got a huge footprint as well, and it's near neighborhoods. I understand our code doesn't. The same one way or the other, and I appreciate that. They just look big.
They do.
We want to talk down the road as to what kind of facilities those are, especially storage. Is this internally phased? External?
And maybe to address both of those concerns, what we can do is provide some examples of similarly sized buildings that are, if we can look at what we can see. Because looking on paper versus looking at it in life might be two different things. I don't know that might help.
The facility they have in Linden is large.
I don't know what that size is.
Okay, I think that's what my
gardener
told me. That's not as large as
this. Question was asked earlier about the circle along that drive. The one thing I liked about the circle was that that road didn't become a racetrack right through the site. The circle forces you to navigate or negotiate something before you finally exit the development. It causes you to pause and maybe take a right turn and head out 4800 as well. So it needs to be big enough that it actually feels like what you want it to be. Sometimes it can be so small that they're almost a more than a speed bump and they disappear in the weeds and gravel. I like the idea of it, again, not being a thoroughfare that just runs you right through the site. I do, however, appreciate this idea of making it easy for us to move through the commercial development. So, appreciate what that's got. Last comment, the office buildings, as you get into the planning, we've got this wide open, almost more suburban site, and it seems like those want to pull apart and empty objects in the landscape versus almost creating this canyon, artificial canyon right in the middle of the development that doesn't need to be there. It seems like having space around those office buildings, a lot of modern office buildings are entering from two sides into a center, first floor area, and then they spill off into the various, leased square footage. So I'd be tempted to want to pull those apart, whether you rotate them or not, to help with this whole driveway issue. It's another planning question. They just seem artificial grouped right in the middle, right next to each other. And probably that's it.
John?
Well, my concerns, I think with the, there's going to be a lot more discussion about that exit on the south side. I don't want to add anything to that. I was kind of in particular looking at the location of the dumpsters, making sure that the trucks, the empty dumpsters, would be able to have ready access if they're going to come during business hours. Because right now, that's not going to happen on Sundays.
Yeah, I think your point's well taken, especially on these two.
Those two particular
right here.
Yeah.
But I mean, you see that they planned a hammerhead turn right here to be able to access this one pretty freely. Obviously, that one is easy to access.
And that might be getting into too much detail at this point.
That's a good point. You know, and depending, depending on if we do play with the location of these office buildings, it would change
that a lot. And I actually want to echo what Councilor Dodge said. I think that those being grouped there is right now just artificial. I mean, and maybe you can mix it up a little, pull away, get a little more trees in there.
Can I add just a little side note to that? Laurie and I were talking, an option to think about. Right now it feels like that primary thoroughfare heads to the south down at 9900. If those office buildings were to pull apart and that circle were designed in a certain way, could it feel more like the primary access through the site comes south to the circle and takes a right, heads up 4800
to the west,
to the west, and then maybe it's just a secondary exit
right in or right out
on the 9900, maybe is west of where you're coming. Right now, it does feel like that's your main drag, is right down to 9900. It wouldn't be that hard, it seems, to get everybody to turn and come out on 4800 and make that feel like that's how you move through the site, and it's only a secondary idea if you, for some reason, need to go down. Just a thought.
No, I think it's very valid. Just to clarify that, as an engineer, this is kind of conceptual. We're thinking, you know, something like that, but I can tell you that's not big enough for a roundabout to function.
Sure,
so I agree.
This notion of a right turn out 4800, maybe a roundabout actually doesn't help that take place some other way.
There's several types of traffic calming devices. There's several types of traffic calming devices that are similar to a roundabout that work, but may not be round. They could be a triangular device or something that's, it kind of separates traffic and forces a car to slow as it's approaching that intersection and eases its way around there. This is one that's fairly common at this point, so that you see it, so we're looking at that. And maybe something could be done to kind of come around that a little bit and bring that access to the west, if that's what's desired.
If the southward access was off access with what's coming from the north, that it might feel more like you're supposed to take a right, maybe that's a larger radius, and head out to 4800. Versus, again, what I'm looking at right now, which it just looks like you can run right through all the way, which you can. It feels like that's what you want to do, and maybe we're suggesting we don't want you to do that.
And as Chandler mentioned, this is a difficult dance, because you're trying to balance traffic movement with the ability to market these particular parcels to get tenants to work there. And I certainly understand the residents of the south. This is not uncommon to me. I've seen these kind of things often. And we want to be sensitive to those, but to find out what the right solution is.
Anything else, Bob?
No, I'm good.
I do have one other question.
Sure.
Are those dumpster facilities right at the back of the storage unit? And the...
Let me see which one.
The training facility right near the chambers?
Yes.
Yep. Those not be right next to the residence?
Well, there's still going to be a wall on the other side. You're still concerned about it.
It'll be awfully loud. We hear, every morning, we hear hearts empty.
Oh, I see.
And look how far hearts is from our backyard.
We could look at other options, functionally wise, that works well. But we can start doing I mean, lots of notes here.
Anything else, John?
No, I'm good. I'm okay. Special for now.
All right. My name's Dave, and I'm going to go next.
That's okay.
After you're done, I have.
Yeah, we'll sort that. We'll not. Okay, so got a little few things here. So I think words matter, so I want to make sure we're consistent in our nomenclature. So some of our documentation talks about it's an athletic training facility. The map says it's a physical training facility. Just want to, you know, as we get to the public hearing and all that, I'll make sure we're, things that difference between those two. I think we're talking about an athletic training facility, which on my mind is a little different than a physical. I mean, I know they're very similar, it can be the same. But I think we should just pick a name, right, and stick to it in that regard. And then down on just don't want to read the public to be
finishing some time. So on building E, that it says drive third, like Thursday restaurant, drive third. I don't really think that this restaurant will only drive through on Thursdays, so just change that to drive through. Just a couple little things like that, make sure we're consistent. So a couple of things I had. So I'll start with the entrance to the south. I think that wherever that ends up landing should be a right turn only out of the development. There should be no left turn permitted. We talked about that once before when there was a previous developer wanting to put in a development here. We talked about that. So I'd advocate a right turn only out of the commercial zone. And then I would suggest a second cutout down by building F, just east of that, where that restaurant is down the corner. A second cutout, right turn only as well. It seems like a lot of traffic is going to be down there with those four restaurant pads and the retail, and forcing them to drive east to exit on the south doesn't make a lot of sense to me. If they had a quick way to just hop out, turn right there.
I think you touched on that's why there. I think there needs to be an access there. I as I'm thinking about it, though, there could be some unintended consequences of right in, right out. In that, if I'm not as familiar with the property and I pull in right here and I see it's a right in, right out, I'm going all the way through the neighborhood, U-turning and coming back through the neighborhood rather than having one impact, I'm having two impacts.
Maybe well, I'm only talking about exit impacts. That
maybe have zero impacts.
So I'm only talking about the exit out, right? So you can still turn into the complex.
So you have full access from this road.
Yeah.
Only a
yeah.
right out.
Right. Right.
No left turn.
Yeah. No left turn.
So I actually like that. If we're going to have an entrance there.
And if we're looking to have one entrance, I would like my fellow commissioner to recommend we push that entrance to the west, down close to that restaurant pad. Maybe have it right there, potentially, if we're looking to have one, not two. But that'd be also right out of the lane.
Are you talking, like, maybe cut this
yeah.
out here?
Right. Yeah, right there. So you mentioned a moment ago how UDOT, we have a hard time getting UDOT to help cooperate. And how impossible is it possible? I'm just curious. Why do you say it's impossible?
Because it's UDOT.
But they work for us, right? So just help me understand why it's impossible.
I don't think it's impossible, but it does delay the project quite a bit, and then you're kind of at mercy of them. And I don't know that it's necessarily needed.
Yeah. I just didn't know the design, there's any limitations on your design because the thought was we got to cooperate.
I can give you a little bit of background on that with my experience with the road classification on 4800 has, if I'm understanding this correctly, has changed actually in the last couple of years on how they classify that highway. Before they would allow a 300 foot separation in access. As I understand it, the classification now minimum is 600 feet. Separation between accesses. So if that's the case, the nearest access you could get from an intersection would be 600 feet away before you could jump to the next access. So I believe that's the current classification, but I can't
remember. All right. So a couple other things. So we have an indoor storage facility, and I know you talked about it being an indoor climate control facility, and I like to have the climate control language in there. I don't want it to have it be your traditional indoor storage facility that's garage door, right? You pull them down and it's not climate control anymore. It's just a regular storage facility. So I like to see that climate control verbiage as part of the application or the submission. As we move forward, we should consider, and I want the tenants to understand that maybe occupying these buildings around hours of operation, about how they're likely to be limited in some manner, whatever that may end up being.
You're talking, I'm assuming you're talking about the two
buildings. Yeah. Hours of operation that are permissible, not permissible. turn over those to be, but I can't imagine we would want this facility being so 24 hours a day, 24/7.
I don't think it is. I don't think that's in their format. And then we have talked about limiting access on the storage units during certain times of the day. That's something that we have already discussed.
Right, so I imagine it needs some type of quiet hour starting. I don't know what the time would be, but all the way 11 p.m. the latest, 10 p.m. possibly. I don't know. I hate to see coming to the wives and boys past the traditional bedtime. The homes there. Although I understand too that type of facility probably likes to train into the wee hours of the night too. So I'm cognizant of that as well, but they should be cognizant that there'll probably be some limited hours of operation. I'll propose that when we get to the American part of things. So the little city park we have here. So part of my concern is that the physical athletic training facility will, on a nice sunny day, use the park outside for their training instead of indoors for their training. And you got the boom box going out there. Pretty soon the park is no longer a public park. It's an extension of the training facility. So that's one reason why I wanted the word indoor training facility as part of the application, so they're not doing training outdoors in the city park. I mean, you can't, citizens and public can do what they want, right? But what we don't want is them thinking they can go have a class out there and use the park in that manner.
They're on the public building. That's very good. Things are out of advice there, because we would allow them to do that in any park during the normal day. That's
sure.
So
it's a compromise, right? I mean,
you're right. I see where you're going.
The activity's not even permitted to the zone, so it's a compromise. So we may compromise and allow them to do some indoor training there, but I wouldn't want to have them do outdoor training.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
What have you talked about? Jenny Reese actually, I think, brought this up. She envisioned maybe if you have areas there where parents would be waiting for their athletes to come out of the training facility, there would be tables there. You would pick up whatever food you brought from the front and go and wait for your student to come out of there. And so it would be more of a gathering place, but an area less of a soccer field kind of place, more of a table waiting time.
Yeah, no, that's true. And then obviously this is the conceptual, but were we talking about using the park as double as the detention base?
We had talked about that to see if that was possible. I've done some preliminary calculations. I can't get very much storage in that because there's 15 feet of fall from the north side to the south side of the property. And if I could catch anything, I'll have to catch whatever the facility is in that northeast corner. So it's a fairly small amount of storage. So at this point, most of our storage is we're anticipating being, at this point, it's down in that furthest south, southwest corner, underneath the park.
So a little more on the park. I'd like to see the possible insertion of a, not a robust, but fairly inexpensive pavilion, a couple of tables, so that mom and dad can sit in the shade and watch your kids play, that sort of thing. And I'd move this playground that's here to the east, so that it's away from that road, the main thoroughfare, so that kids are playing away from traffic instead of close to the traffic. I'd just push that up east, maybe stick a pavilion in its place instead. I don't know, something like that. So basically, down on the west side, we basically have four drive-through restaurants, essentially. I know that only two of them are labeled as drive-through restaurants, but the way the traffic pattern here is basically four drive-through restaurants. And I know one of the biggest things that I hear from citizenry is a desire for a traditional sit-down restaurant. I don't see that anywhere here. I don't know if it was conceivable to potentially take one of these paths, take away the drive-through part, and maybe expand the building that might attract a traditional restaurant tenant. So that's just something to consider.
Chandler, you need to be up at the microphone.
the drive-throughs on there actually don't service the entire building. Only service the, whatever the unit is on the parks house. Because they have to have staffing and whatnot through there. So we've got buildings that we're currently building similar to these up in South Jordan at the moment. And actually in that square footage, we've actually got three tenants. And it's only the furthest south building that is the drive-through. Does that make sense? By the time you loop around, you only have one drive-thru window. You can't use the same drive-thru for multiple tenants. And so those other, you know, those other spaces on the north side are certainly open to sit-down type facilities. We've got some facilities like Olbetta that we're just looking at, and some of those are, they're really kind of fun facilities, but they're sit-down type restaurants. They're not huge formal sit-down restaurants, but they're certainly sit-down.
So quick
dining is
what I think
restaurants.
Yes.
Yeah.
So these size of restaurant pads, what type of give me an example of the type of restaurants that would attract this
size? Oh my gosh, I'm not
sure. You know the answer to that, or is that not your
That's not my bailiwick.
Okay. Well, and we might be getting ahead of ourselves here. That's okay. So I like getting ahead. I think something to keep in mind is that it's not what they're handing out the window, it's the window itself. Like they could be handing out any type of food. It's a conditional use, and you have to think of conditional uses as permitted uses with conditions of what the state covers for. And if they want to put in all these drive-throughs, then you have to think of then how do we mitigate the impact of the drive-through itself. That's not necessarily what's being handed out the window. Even though we all have conditions, that's something to do.
Yes, this is, you know, where the, state your name, Joel Wright, city attorney for Cedarhills. This is really the limits of our power. You know, we can do these things, but choosing the individual restaurants is, for other cities has been a threat to get in trouble. So, keep that.
Okay. Another question I had was, is the intent to build out this entire thing in one fell swoop, or is it going to be a phased?
It's phased. It's phased. The three people that are fairly, or three tenants that are fairly eager to move forward are the two larger tenants on the east, and the one on the northwest. Is Angus moving forward if something were to happen. The other tenants are still up in the air. We don't have tenants for those yet. But the intent would be to effectively try to ground leases if possible. And so there would be situations where a tenant would come in and build their facility and lease the ground for manufacturing.
Do you have a projected timeline as to when you would think that you could develop this property in the bowl?
Well, we started this, what, about 6 months ago, Chan, or something around there?
Yeah.
And effectively, with those three tenants, we're probably a good solid third plus through the process now. So as far as being able to fill tenants in those spaces, and so my guess is this is a 2 to 3 year project to get those built.
I only asked that question in the context that part of my concern is granting permissible use for these, for the storage facility and the training facility that don't generate sales tax revenue. And then, whatever reason, you, as Openshaw, as a developer, doesn't finish the rest of the project, then we end up having a commercial zone with no sales tax revenue. So, I would like to see, as part of building these two back buildings, some measure of permitted buildings. These up buildings up front on the west there, as an investment towards that. I don't know anything about Openshaw. I don't know whether or not Openshaw is going to, whether they can or will fulfill. I don't know whether projects they've done. I don't know anything about Openshaw, right? So we're putting all of our faith and confidence in the fact that we're going to change these permitted uses in our sales tax generating zone, and then we don't end up having any sales tax generation. So that's my concern.
I can give you a little bit of background. I've known Mr. Openshaw for about 15 years, which he's been doing these same type of projects. He does mostly retail, commercial sites in I've done sites like this. I've been in business since 1992, so just over 25 years, and I've generated probably in the neighborhood of 6,000 projects for residential and commercial sites. He's been very successful with ones he has. One he's doing right now in South Jordan is probably as close to the this portion, not as large as this is, but as close to the same type of facility that he's done recently. And those units have leased out and moved ahead very quickly. So as soon as he received his approvals, he had leases within 30, 60 days.
So does fellow commissioners have any additional questions or comments?
That was part of what I was leaning towards my additional questions. There's really not any guarantee or any way we can guarantee that they can do that. Like, if we rezone it, then it's rezoned and it's done. So there's, we can't require them to build all of it together, I think.
No, I am of the opinion that we can, and I would probably point to the recent ombudsman opinion that we received in that the city can't dictate market conditions to the developer. I think it is that simple, so I'm going to go back and read that.
So, that being said, let's say that this does get rezoned and those two uses are put in as the light. I have serious concerns about the athletic training facility and the traffic coming out of it, because if it is tied to Lone Peak and high school students or anything like I was,
they've changed.
Oh, I'm sure. then, you know, all of those athletes with fast cars and excitement and all of those things might be a little quick out of there, and you know, want to make sure that any traffic calming measures are adequate to slow that down. So there's not you know, a couple hundred feet of open space for them to go flying through. Like, it's got to be really slow there, and there's absolutely no way they can use that, because they will if there's an opportunity.
And I think that's where we can, as we address the walkability, these crosswalks, they could end up being speed tables in a couple instances,
please,
in order to slow people down.
And the roundabout's beautiful because of that exactly. They have to go around it to slow down. And unless they're like.
But I mean, if you're looking at the, where they're going to speed through this property, it's going to be right here, and it's going to be right here. And if you have, you know, speed tables every 100 feet or so, you're not going to be able to accelerate without some serious congestion.
So for all four of my kids have gone to American Fork High School, and we don't have that long of those kids. Just don't need high school.
If it has a motor on it, it has potential.
Strike that from the.
I don't put everything in the mix.
But yeah, definitely, especially if they're coming, if it is a two-way turn there, you know, if they're going back through, that opens up a lot of off the beaten path quick. I think with that facility, that type of traffic really needs to be controlled with the traffic plan. I don't think
that we didn't. No, and that they will be doing a traffic study. We will be looking at the numbers, and that will be verified by the city's engineers. And that's where I think we're going to get a lot better direction and indication of where we need to go on traffic flow within the development itself and all the access points as well.
So I just have a question. Office buildings, is there a reason why they're not uniformly shaped? I'm just one of those people that like uniformity. I'm sure there's a creative reason for it, but just wondering.
The creative reason isn't as exciting as you'd like, as I'd like to think they are. Effectively, what we're coming down with is we're doing our layouts. We try to balance and make sure we meet the parking requirements of the needed uses and facilities. So we start with those that are the primary source of a revenue for the developers and then kind of move forward to make sure those are parked before. Frankly, those are really just kind of the building areas that are left that still fit within the requirements of the parking. And so the building that will come in there will be whatever shape they decide to do with it. With the location of the dry miles and whatnot, how they're matched, that's just really kind of where they fall. Let me, if I could just make one comment, Mr. Williams, up here. I really want to let you know how grateful I am and appreciative of being able to sit down in this kind of forum and talk about these issues. We by no means are trying to push anything down your throats, because we're at the stage where we're trying to conceptually come up with something that works, that meets with everybody's needs. We're certainly welcome, we're willing to relook at issues and make adjustments if that's where the consensus is that we want to go. But I just appreciate you sitting down and looking at this and giving us some critical feedback.
Thank you. So I have a legal advice question. So if we approve this conceptual plan with essentially the state we approve, we're approving permitted uses, conceptually we're approving these permitted uses, this zone, is that in any way lead to if later the city through the public hearing process and such decides not to allow these permitted uses, we as a public body give green light or endorse to or in any manner somehow de facto approved these permitted uses? You ever see where I'm going with that thought process? Are you making sense?
No. It will go to council and then it will come back. So
it just seems like to me where I put things maybe a little backwards here. Maybe we should be approving the permitted uses through the public hearing process and then approving the concept.
We have done a public hearing. It was noticed as amendments to the city code Title 10, Chapter 6A, planned commercial development projects related to conditional uses in the SC1.
Okay.
Commercial zone.
Okay.
So we have done a public hearing. There will be another one in
this. We haven't approved that yet. Right?
No.
That's what I'm saying. So I just wonder if we should be approving the permitted use before you approve a concept plan that has these permits. See what I'm saying?
Well, see, we own the land, and they don't want to close on it until they know what they're
going to do. There's good faith in both parties here.
Right. Okay, I just want to get some legal advice.
So I said,
what?
Yeah.
Is there anybody else have a question before we maybe entertain a motion here?
I did actually have a comment about the park again. So chances are, if there is a minimally used use on the one side, it's a block space, and a tiny little strip in the middle of a very busy athletic training facility, that park's not being used. It doesn't have very good access. The parking is probably going to be filled up from other uses, and it's just it's great for open space, but it's not going to be great for park. And so, is that really going to be a park? And if it is going to be a park, is it going to be dedicated to the city, and the city maintains it all?
Yes.
And so, essentially, we're maintaining their green space so they don't have to because they couldn't find a better use for it.
I'll say better use for it because we are requiring a certain amount of open space. So.
That. But we're cutting their grass because why?
Because we're a city that values open space and parks.
I think it goes to this.
I said sarcastic, but I really think that is what it comes down to. Is you look at I'm a father with small kids, and when I take my kids to a restaurant, it's the worst experience of my life.
Absolutely.
So in the summer, you know, if I'm going to pick up food with my family at one of these restaurants, darn tootin', I'm taking over to the park to eat. Mm-hmm. So I do think it'll get used. I think it'll get used more by the patrons of the commercial area rather than. And I see that they put this path in here, and I appreciate the thought to get people from point A to point B. But I think that's a nice gesture. But I think that the heavy users of the park are going to be the people that come here and that come here, not necessarily this way.
But there's not really parking access to that park area, so other than
right here.
But that's going to be mostly used for the training facility, right?
I think you're going to see the training facility with the entrance right here. Probably this gets used up first, spilling out into here, and then this is secondary and large events.
And will that secondary large events parking be part of the park, which then you would have to maintain the parking lot for it, or is that?
No, you see the line here. This is the training facility's property. It's hard to see it there.
That same thought, I mean, that crossed my mind as well as like parking for the park, right? Or is it how it would be? So I kind of concur with your thought process there.
You park it around the roundabout.
But I do like the fact that it's a park is here though, because if you read that general plan, one of the purposes of the commercial zone is to encourage community gathering. So I think they met that. Desire from that standpoint, right?
It also serves to just break up the industrial feel of having two large buildings right there.
You can all make a motion?
I will. I move that we approve concept plan for the Cedar Hills Gateway concept plan.
Do I have a second?
I can say with the notes that we've added to that.
I think we would do that preliminary. I think that's
okay.
Preliminary.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Yeah. We'll have a long list of preliminary. The more they listen to us tonight, the smaller the list will be. So, do I have a second, Ben? I will second the motion. Any discussion before we vote on it?
Got to make sure I understand what we're approving.
Let me read you the code. I got help. Subdivision Regulations, Title 11, Chapter 4, Procedure for Approval. It's 11-4-2. It's the related to the concept plan. It says, preparation. Sub provider shall then prepare his concept plan. Said plan shall be prepared in accordance with city standards and adopted by resolution. Council, that's actually not true. It's the city's plan commission. So it's the obtained planning commission approval. The planning commission shall review the concept plan. But it goes on to say that approval of the concept plan shall not be construed to constitute approval of the subdivision, but shall be deemed as an expression of approval of the basic concept and the general layout of the proposed subdivision, which the subdivider may use as a guide in the preparation of the preliminary plan. We're not locked. We're not giving the developer any vesting rights by approving a concept plan. So I understand that there's a litany of concerns that were raised tonight, and I think that Mark's been gracious enough to take good notes and take into consideration what's been said. I've made a lot of notes, and I'm going to be working with them to incorporate all this. But you're not locked in on what you're telling them tonight. They can't go and hold the city accountable saying you approved our concept plan. Now, if this were a preliminary plan, that's a different story. But under the concept plan, you're giving them the thumbs up to move ahead on the general idea. Any discussion before we vote?
When we expect to see concept being preliminary?
Mark is what's going to design that, but
I've been being pushed to once we complete this concept phase of the tools to do this. So my guess is Q Well, do we give this to council first?
No.
Okay.
So come back to the planning commission.
So then my guess, we've already done quite a bit of work preliminarily on utilities and services, those kind of things, to make sure we're able to move ahead with those. So layout things could change between now and then. They have to address some of the comments that brought up tonight. So my guess is you'd probably see something, some of that,
and I'll be reviewing the plans and making out. I guess I have my list of issues that were raised, and this will come back. The preliminary phase, I think, is we got down in some weeks tonight, but I think the preliminary phase is really going to be really get down to the degree of building and elevations, the actual traffic patterns. That's when we're really going to see pushback from. That's really when the council approves the preliminary plan, that's where they get their vested rights as developers. The final plan is really just cross your T's, dot your I's, and make sure that you didn't miss anything big. The preliminary phase is the big one.
So, any other discussion before we vote?
I'd like to do a roll call vote this time. So, Stephen Thomas. How do you vote?
I vote no.
So we're oriented spirit?
Yes.
Is it yes you said? Jeff Dodge?
Yes.
Don Ridge?
Yes.
David Driggs votes yes. So the motion carries. All right, next agenda item. Let's see here. Where we at? So, review recommendation on amendments to the City Code Title 10, Chapter 6A, 10 commercial development project related to conditional uses of the SC1 commercial zone.
This is a carryover from the previous discussion. As we mentioned before, the athletic training facility, which if you picture this, is right here, and the storage units, which are right here, and the office, which is actually in the red here, but this is an older one, this needs to be a little bit deeper. But what they're asking for is to consider uses that are not currently allowed in the retail or mixed-use subdivision, in the training indoor climate control storage units case. So there's two motions here. There's a motion to recommend, not recommend, the indoor climate control as a conditional use in the mixed-use retail zone. And then there's a recommendation to the City Council, or not recommendation to the City Council, to adjust the boundaries to allow for this overlay zone between. So this is the mixed-use, this blue, this red is the retail zone. This would be, this purple would be an IR. It would allow for, it would allow for flexibility of development. So I think what they're asking for is from the property lines here, in order to do our development that is being proposed, they're asking for 300 feet overlay zone for both those buildings.
So why only the climate control storage is part of the motion? Why is the
Because the athletic training facility is actually currently a conditional use in this zone already. The climate control is not. So we're adding it as a conditional use. By adding it as a conditional use, you are able to, like I said before, you've got to treat it as a permitted use with conditions. So if they can mitigate those impacts that are identified, maybe traffic, lighting, noise, then they get to do their facility. That's how conditional is.
Is there an overlay of the site plan with the buffer so that we can see where the buildings would sit?
No, but if you can imagine where the offices were, it's yep. Going to sit right at the edge of the offices.
Okay.
So this is a, I didn't have time to put together a new map. It's just imagine it's purple for the area being a little bit deeper.
Is a city park permitted in this zone?
It would be, well, it's open space.
There's public
recreation facilities.
So that's all your presentation, right?
Well, we've talked a lot about
So I for one am resident. Is that the right word?
Resident.
I would like to see. First, I'd like to see. I know we saw a concept plan, and for me, I'd like to see closer presentation of what we may be preliminary approving before I consider granting non-sales tax revenue activity in the commercial zone. I guess there's a long laundry list we gave tonight, and. I for one, I mean, I don't have my commissioner still, and I don't think we're under any obligation to meet the developer's desire to begin business, right? This is our property and our commercial zone, and we're only going to develop this thing once, probably, in our history. So I for one would be hesitant to grant permitted use for that until I see a little more culture.
I think the only pushback I would give on that is that changing the use of the zone and not improving the zone property. And I understand where you're going.
They're tied to the hip.
They are tied to the hip, you're right.
But it's also a function of an evolving code.
It is.
If we had more established code, we wouldn't be talking about this.
You're right. I think that's the only reason I.
Well, I mean, this body and the council went through a lot of work effort the last several years on this code, and this was not the permitted use that came up during that process. And I'm not going to say we think very permitted use in the world that we come from, but and this body needs to obviously vote on it. All that, we have a public hearing already. That's just one person, one commissioner's opinion. Any other public comment or questions from the commissioner on this topic?
I know we talked in the past, as we talked about this commercial zone, actually, this purple kind of lays out an area where we talked in the past about somehow mitigating between commercial and single-family homes that are there.
Yeah.
Thinking out loud, I'm wondering, are we doing that? Are we helping that take place if we were to allow this overlay? And we're lighter, the blue is a lighter commercial approach allowing some other types of this discussed in the past. So I'm wondering if we're moving in the right direction, allowing this overlay by allowing some of that lighter commercial to overlay some of the heavier commercial that we've got out towards 4800. Again, with the goal in mind that we're butting up against single family homes here, but we want to sort of step down towards those homes.
Yeah, so set the climate controlled storage, set it aside. I think that by doing an overlay zone, it accomplishes two things. It does create the ability for a buffer with the adjacent residents. Because you're right. Because right now, if you look at this map as it's currently zoned, this is all red, which is the more intense use. Right? So you have the more intense use that's abutting right next to the property lines of the residences. Well, this allows for a softer retail. Be used next to that those residents, and so that it. I think it benefits the residents on this side. You see, these residents are already the beneficiaries of being next to the mixed use zone. These people would also be beneficiaries of being next to that use as well. So that's one thing I think it accomplishes. The second thing I think it accomplishes is that we've had a number of discussions with developers. It's not just the open shop group. We've met with a number of people over the years. In the past 5 to 6 years, I've sat down with commercial developers on a number of occasions, and to a T, they've always pointed to this back piece saying, I don't have a problem filling these slots up in the front, but this back piece, that's a challenge. But it gives, by doing an overlay like this, you're expanding the uses that are allowed in that zone. You're basically giving the residents the option of the software, commercial, but you're also giving the developer more options to seek out people who don't know this.
Do we have to do both? Do we have to?
You can do one or the other, right?
I don't really have a problem with changing the boundaries and the use districts. I don't have a problem with that. I'm not sure that we want to approve those conditional uses.
I'd like to speak a little bit to that. I work at a facility that, at the end of our facility across the road, is a storage facility. And it's a very industrial, outdoor, not indoor climate control, standard lockers, garage doors, at about 240 units. And the traffic that we deal with from that is essentially non-existent. It is probably the quietest of the 15 or 20 neighbors we've got around. It's rare that I see a car entering or exiting the facility.
I'm speaking from
the point of view of making a quiet buffer zone. I can't think of a building that would be a better quiet buffer zone than that. I think the athletic facility, which is already permitted,
well,
conditionally.
It's conditional in
that one's
zone.
Gonna have a lot more impact on the neighbors.
If they were outdoor. I don't know that there's any outdoor tennis courts in this one.
I said just from a traffic and people waiting, kids throwing a football. There's been
so
much more impact than that.
But to Chairman Drew's point, I don't know the way. I don't see the need to wait, but I do see that if they're approving a building that you may not have seen is important. So that's why the actual architecture of the indoor climate control building is going, it's going to matter what that looks like, because it changes setting less than 3 minutes.
I'm just about to make a point.
But you did make a good point. I appreciate your point. Because not only do residents such as Lorian have to look at the building, it's going to add to or detract from the aesthetics of our commercial zone and what we're going for. So to that end, I do think that the elevations of the indoor climate facility, the training facility, the office buildings, every building, it's going to matter. But I do agree with John that the actual impact of a storage unit is fairly negligible. If you're looking for something that's taking up space but not impacting the residents, that's it.
Yeah.
But generates no sales tax revenue.
Generates no sales tax, but keep in mind that's only one of 4 or 5 provisions that we're going for in the commercial zone.
Oh, there's property tax.
There's property tax, but it's also one of the other provisions is to provide services to the residents. That's one. And I have been approached by so many people wanting to do indoor climate controlled storage that there is a demand out there. So it is providing a service that they see as needed in this market. It's a gathering place and it's a sales tax. So people don't really gather. I've actually heard rumors that they treat this as a man cave. But that's such a strange thing to do. So you have the park. I feel like they're trying to accommodate the commercial goal of a gathering place with a park. The sales tax, it's going to be hard to see something that's developed in this commercial zone. The city's going to see a boost in sales tax. There's not that many businesses that would provide a jump in sales tax that would cause the city to open its eyes and say, wow. Walmart did it back in 2007. But I mean, unless you're going to do a Hyundai dealership right there, which I don't think you really want, The sales tax on those, you have to sell a lot of hamburgers to equal the sales tax in the car. So sales tax generation, a restaurant is a great facility, and we all want one. I would love one, but it's not going to generate a sales tax. It's going to just change the city's financial fortune.
Question, isn't the final sale, closing on this land, tied to this?
This decision tonight?
Yeah, but I don't heard change the zone.
It will impact it, yes. Well, I say that with caution because, I mean, they can explore other uses, but as they've said, they've got tenants lined up.
I suspect that the tenants will continue to be lined up. And I know there was a timeline on, I think, on the agreement between the two parties that could be extended, with both parties which agreed to that. Any other comments, discussion on this? Anyone want to make a motion?
Can I ask what you want to see?
What do you want to see?
I'll make the motion first.
Someone want to make a motion to either approve, recommend, or not recommend?
On which one? There's two motions. So you have to address.
Yeah, there's two motions. Yeah, I mean, there's two motions to recommend or not recommend.
Okay, I'm going to move that we recommend a change in the boundaries of the retail and mixed-use districts by allowing the mixed-use district to overlay the retail district within 300 feet of the Cedar Hills residential zone.
Is there a second on that motion?
Second.
All right, any discussion before we vote? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those in favor say nay. Nay.
Is that you saying opposed? You're opposed.
Opposed.
Okay.
Yeah. Those that are opposed say nay. Nay. Okay. All right, so we have a second motion that we should consider making here. Anyone want to make this second motion?
I'll make it. Let's get discussion going. I recommend indoor plant controlled storage and general office space be conditional use in the mixed use district of the SC1 zone.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
All right, discussion before we vote.
I would much rather see a picture of what it's coming back to the
I'd just like to bring up, we're not the land use authority on this particular change, what the council is. So this is mostly a recommendation from us.
It's a recommendation.
Just right, to be clear on that.
Going back to what Lauren was saying, the third option here that's not listed is it is something that you want to have to come back before you make a decision on. There is a third option on the table. But his motion gets voted, his motion first.
Unless you want to amend it.
So if it's voted, if it's not voted to be recommended, then they could resubmit and reapply.
Yeah, so if you vote to not recommend it, mm-hmm. it would go to the planning, go to the city council without the planning commission for recommendation.
Right.
And but it would still be on the planning commission. Or sorry, it's still be on the city council.
Yeah, right. Okay.
To city council. I think that's the point you're trying to make.
And we're really not positioned to table as long as we've already made a motion.
You can vote on that motion.
Vote on a motion.
And you can
have an amendment. Yeah. What does the body want to do? Do you want to table it or vote on recommending or not recommending?
I think we should go ahead and vote on as recommended with the motion because it's going to get voted on either way. Anyway.
I think that I guess I want to see what's going to happen later. So,
Any discussion before we vote? So before we vote, I would just, the public that's here, who's here aware, this will be most likely an agenda item about coming city council meetings, so keep an eye on the agenda, see when they come up, comment there. So all those in favor of the recommendation, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Nay. So the motion carries.
I think one thing you can still have them do is we can provide elevations.
I come up with, yeah, I come up with several elevation things that I've seen. I don't know that the first looking environmental storage has developed elevations yet.
You're deciding who you're now the architect, right? So that's where they're not going to have much on the architectural side.
We could certainly bring some examples of similar type facilities that are going to give you an idea what it is. If you want a specific elevation for that building, I don't think we're going to have that.
We provided the examples. I think you've seen those already.
Yes.
You've seen those. The challenge I think you're going to find, so I know you're thinking about the architect, is, I mean, they were nice looking office buildings, but trying to make them look colonial, please. It's going to be a challenge with them.
So the next agenda item is review recommendation amendments to the City Code Title 10, Chapter 5 through 2 related to accessory apartments.
This is accessory structures. This is for accessory structures.
Accessory, it says apartments on the
Does it?
Does it?
I don't know.
Seven is structures, eight is apartments.
Structures we've already voted.
Sorry.
No,
we didn't.
Oh, we didn't vote.
We're on number eight, right?
We're on seven.
Let me start over again. The next item on the agenda is review recommendation on amendments to City Code Title 10, Chapter 4B and 4F related to accessory structures. The R1 15,000 and RR21 20,000 residential zones.
Yeah, so current code allows for accessory structures to be built up to 20 feet high. We've discussed allowing for accessory structures in certain instances to be built higher than that in instances where the lot on which the building is being built is able to be subdivided. The rationale there being that if I have a 1 acre lot in a half acre zone, I could in theory subdivide that lot into single family dwellings, put a home that's 35 feet on the lot, but that accessory structure can only be 20 feet. So the discussion we had last month was that if we're going to allow that to put that accessory building, if you're going to go with an accessory building that's higher than 20 feet, and that accessory building needs to meet setbacks of the underlying zone of the main building. So that in the case, and I don't know, sometimes it's going to be shops, sometimes it's going to be outbound garages, sometimes it's going to be a building that can't be converted to a single family home, sometimes it's going to be buildings that could be converted to a single family home. But in order to preserve, I think in order to preserve development right, in the situation like we had with Mr. Wardell, where he has an outbound building that is being converted to a home, that second building met the setback requirements of a home, and then can so preserves that development right. While I think it mitigates any negative impact on the neighbors surrounding it. But it also limits it to 25 feet. So we're not saying that we can build up to 35 feet, it's still limited. It's just that extra 5 feet comes with the stipulation that it has to fall within additional setback. So there's the code that was drafted. Are there any questions on that?
Zoning administrator is who?
Myself. Who are the planners?
We're up to
recommend the proposed amendments to Cedar Hill's municipal code, the 10 that four being related accessory buildings subject to no modifications that we discussed in more details.
I will second the motion.
I would suggest someplace in your motion you at least reference the new language that's been submitted to my motion.
I think that makes sense. Let me modify my motion to reference the suggested code change in red that was part of the planning commission packet. I don't know if you need me to read that.
No, I don't.
So are you second to this then?
I will continue to second, yes.
Okay. Any discussion before we vote? All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. Now, number 8. Review recommendation on Memphis City Code Title 10, Chapter 532, relating to accessory apartments.
Nice, yeah. So we've talked about. I'm gonna turn the time over to Jenny Fay. She's our planning associate. She's here with us tonight. She's been working on this, but I want to kind of just set the table for you. In that, as the city is evaluating our general plan, we have to have a moderate income housing development. The reason we're not talking about the general plan tonight is that there's enough legislation being proposed in the state that's up in question that I don't feel like it's, I think maybe putting the cart ahead of the horse a little bit to try to predict what's going to go on in the state. So in order to just not get ahead of them, we've taken it off the table and we're going to watch the legislation and see what's passed and see what the requirements are. Because moderate income and low income housing is a statewide issue, especially in Salt Lake Valley, not necessarily off on our end, but nonetheless, each city is required to have a moderate income housing general plan. You currently do not. We're working on it as a staff that we will begin working with at the planning commission level. But part of that is that we feel like, given the demographics of Cedar Hills, and this is why I apologize, I didn't send out the information to you, but I don't know if it's necessarily relevant today, the discussion we're going to have. But in order to meet some of those qualifications or to have any sort of moderate income housing, we have to get a sense of what type of, where our accessory dwelling units are, where our apartments are in the city. They're already permitted. They're already allowed as a conditional use throughout the residential zone. So what we're proposing tonight is to, I don't want to say beef up, but to strengthen the code related to accessory dwelling apartments in order to mitigate some of the impacts we've seen over the years and some of the negative consequences of having apartments. I think that they're necessary. I think that the apartments are a good thing to have in the community. There's not 100% agreement with that, but I do think it's important to allow for them in the community. However, I do feel that as part of that allowance, there needs to be certain stipulations that are met as part of those accessory dwelling units. So I think there's three issues that are germane to any discussion when it comes to accessory dwelling units. The first one is the building code. We're not talking about the building code, but we're working as a staff to present to the council what type of building code needs to be met. We have to meet building code, but what definitions we're using for building code matter in this case, but that's not necessarily a planning commission discussion. Second, currently in the past we've required impact fees as part of any accessory dwelling unit. And I think that's been the deterrent to make people not come and register their accessory apartments. As we've done a kind of a survey of the cities around us, we're not the only city that had charged impact fees on accessory apartments, but we're one of the few that did. Where we're not collecting any, I feel like trying to collect that money is deterring people from trying to register their apartments. So in order to make things a little bit easier for residents that have these, in order to have them comply so that we can get a number of A where they are, and we want to have the residents on the forms that are filling out kind of self-report what the, give us a range of rents that we know if their apartment meets some of the moderate income housing needs, if the apartment meets even some of the low income housing needs, so that we can then report that to the state as part of our annual or biannual reporting. The third element, and this is where the Planning Commission comes in, is the zoning requirements for an apartment. Currently, our zoning requirements are 2 off-street parking stalls are required, must be owner-occupied, as well. Yes, so it must have its own facilities, it must have its own kitchen, basically. So the code that Jenny's worked on preparing, I'm going to have her go through that and answer your questions. And I think that she's going to be coming to the Planning Commission presenting a lot more in the future, so. But, thank you guys for great. But I'm going to turn the time over to her and have her answer your questions.
Yes, Taylor says that we need to meet the state requirements, and so one of the first things that we addressed at the UTM. So part of the UTM is to recognize the residential characteristics of Cedar Hills while providing the supplementary living information to the community. So that's why we added it to the first A, if you go down to the first one. And in this, we wanted to add in some limitations to minimize the impact on neighboring properties and neighborhoods. So the first one is the intent, so we wanted to add that into the first. The second one is accessory apartments are permitted within the city, but they are subject to compliance with conditions and criteria. So under the B, we have conditions and criteria. The first one we have is a conditional use, and this will complement what we already got in our city code under conditional use permits. So under this one, we have, if you notice, under supplementary development standards, we have accessory apartments, land use authority, we have it listed there, and then we also have it listed in each zone as it relates to that.
So, to clarify, who is the land use authority for accessory apartments?
That would be the administration.
So, I suggest we use similar language in our last motion. I think it was a city administrator or city, what was the last? Our last motion that approves the conditional uses.
As approved by the administration?
The zoning administrator.
Zoning administrator.
Yeah.
Is that the language you want here?
Yeah.
So instead of city planner.
The official title is city planner, but the city planner acts as the zoning administrator. You could even just go put a blanket statement that the conditional use permit is approved by administration. And then the necessary body is the approval body.
Let's just try and pick a word and stick to it.
Well, there's 2 components. You have to have the building official.
Yeah, a lot of this is the building permit. Because they work in side by side.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily one person on staff. That's why I'd say just it's an administrative decision. Because once they've complied with building, let's say they comply with building code, but they don't comply with zoning code, they're not going to get approved. It's got to be approval through both bodies. But it's just the administration. Well, administration just indicates that it's staff. Administration just indicates that it's staff.
I like city administrator or city planner.
We can say city planner, or I would probably just say the planning department and the building department.
I think it should be a specific title.
I would hesitate with that just because
titles change,
but the departments stay the same.
Well, you say we say department, there's 3 people in the department, all 3 people will decide or what?
And I would hate to have them wait for me to approve every one. So.
Well, my thing is we have 2 individuals by title here that would approve it. I'm just saying the last motion we city planners would be city administrator, right?
Zoning administrator.
So I would say approval of the zoning administrator or building administrator.
I can live with that.
That's what I'd say. Because just to be consistent.
I don't know if we're inconsistent everywhere else in the code or what. At least we're consistent tonight anyway.
I would say, though, that some of those powers can and should be delegated.
You could say the office of the zoning administrator.
Well, we have a zoning administrator, or we don't, right?
We do.
So, if we don't have one, I guess that means it's approved until we get one.
So, we check.
So,
we're trying to make this easier for him.
Just, yeah. Okay, I think I suggest the language.
I can live with zoning administrator, and we'll make it work.
And building official.
And building. We're going to leave building official, though, right?
Sure.
I think that one needs to stay.
I assume that's a title.
That is a title, yes.
Who is the building official today?
Jeff Mogg.
Mogg.
Okay. So we have one of those.
We have a zoning administrator, too.
It's Ted. Okay.
And I just want to reiterate that most of these are taken from cities within the state of Utah. So this is the verbiage that I came up with. This was the actual figure for different cities. So the second one, we're going to go with the time limit. An accessory apartment or a conditional use permit shall be valid for 1 year in which the first issue. Thereafter, the conditional use permit will be automatically renewed for the next succeeding year upon receipt of an annual registration fee, and this is subject to discussion, this registration fee. The evidence that failure running is occupied by the owner, that one is set in stone, and a determination of the city that all conditions of approval remain in effect. That means nothing changes upon the condition of use.
We only have one fee, right? We're not more than one fee.
Yeah.
We do have a conditional use permit. So the registration fee would be separate.
So it be a and a registration.
Right, and that, like I said, that's up for discussion.
So the registration fee only picks up the second year?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're right, but there also could be, it's not listed here and it doesn't need to be listed here, would be any inspection fees that need to be passed along to the applicant.
Well, while we're grabbing language,
with the permit.
I would suggest we insert.
But that's just covered under the building, the general building process.
So this is only for new construction?
It's for new construction and old construction. So their old construction would still need to get an inspection, but that it would be a one-time thing. And then the registration would be, you'd have an initial setup fee and then the conditional use permit, and then they'd have an annual registration fee, which is pretty minimal. It's usually typically $20, $25 in other cities.
This owner-occupied fee that we need, that only applies to accessory apartments. Like, I could rent my house to a family or to a group of people as long as it's not an accessory.
Totally different issue. If you're renting it to two separate families, then it's a problem. Then you're basically renting out your house as a duplex. If you're renting it out to two separate families, then that would not be permissible under our code. You could rent out, but you could still rent out your home to a family, but you can't subdivide your home, in essence.
Right. But let's say that they're not related individuals, but maybe they've got five rooms and I rent it to five people, like that.
That comes later.
But yeah, we have an occupancy covering.
Right, no, but this is not for the apartment, but for the house. Like, I rent a house, I can rent it to as many people as I want as long as they're good. Like,
not currently, no. But that's probably going to be a discussion that's coming. Not tonight, though.
I mean, that limits severely people's landlord options. Let's say I own five houses and I rent them all of a sudden I can't do that anymore.
Well, they can rent it out to one family. They can't sublet it out to an accessory apartment with that.
What if it's not a family?
There's a single definition of where it defines what a family is, right. A single family dwellings.
A single family, in our code, a family can, I think it's up to four unrelated individuals.
That's what I was trying to clarify.
But my previous comment, my cryptic comment, was there is a high likelihood that this discussion will lead to a further discussion about our definition of a family.
Right, but when we start doing that, we get into housing discrimination issues pretty quick.
Which is why I think we need to have our discussion, our definition of a family evaluated and reviewed before we get into that situation. So you're correct.
So please continue.
Okay, so under the time limitation, like I say, the annual registration fee, that's subject to discussion. The other one is a building permit. It says a building permit shall be obtained by a homeowner from the city before commencement of any new construction of an accessory apartment, and a certificate of occupancy shall be obtained prior to anyone occupying the accessory apartment dwelling unit. All construction and remodeling shall comply with building codes. So basically, before they start this apartment and they want to do it, it would fall under the building department, and it would have to meet all building codes and state codes. Now, under this, as you continue on, in accordance with Utah State Code Section 10-9Z-511-5, is changes to dwelling of egress windows. That one is a little bit different. Those particularly pertain to legal non-conforming rental dwelling units. Unless changes. So it basically states on the Utah State Code, the municipal ordinance adopted may not require changes unless the changes for a reasonable installation of particularly a smoke detector plug-in or battery operated, a round ball circuit interrupter protected by a battery or existing wiring, street addressing or egress windows. So egress windows is mainly what this is. If the bedroom window is smaller than required current state construction code. The other one is electrical system or plumbing system. This existing system has to be functioning or unsafe by determined by an independent electrical or plumbing professional who is licensed. The next one would be hand or guardrails, and then occupancy separation doors required by the IT. International Residential Code. So these would be specifically for existing dwellings. So when the building inspector goes here and does the inspection, he would require these specific
ones. There's a layer of wall inside that has a door so it can access the apartment from the
existing, or where it was considered legal at the time,
they could if they wanted to.
They could go in and they could change things.
Is this where, so it's applicable that state code, is this where it's all restroom facility was on the kitchen come into play, or that different?
No, that's what our state, that's what the city called.
These are like safety issues that we're saying must be met in order for you to convert a basement, if you will.
Yeah, it's a safety issue.
Right. I'd like to clarify something. I think this is the intent of the verbiage.
Okay.
The you need a certificate of occupancy to be obtained prior to anyone occupying an accessory apartment dwelling unit. If you're converting a basement that has had your children living in it and are all off of college now,
right.
They were living in it prior to this. That doesn't count because it's not yet an accessory apartment. Is that correct?
It is. But what it is basically if a resident comes in and says, you know, I want to make my basement an accessory apartment, so then he would have to come in and the building official would go down, do the inspection to make sure that he meets all the criteria, safety issue, or there anything that needs to be done there, and then be able to approve it as an accessory apartment.
So there could be residents prior to that, and that's not. Their children.
It's not
so it's because it's not an accessory apartment yet.
No.
If it's children, it's not an apartment yet. It's just part of your house.
Okay, good. That's what I thought about.
But I think to that point, even if it's occupied initially, I bet you can guess how many we have registered with the city.
Yeah.
It's a goose egg.
Yeah.
But I'm not naive enough to think that we don't have any in the city. So I think that there's going to have to be a period where we are working with residents to get them inspected, and they're going to be occupied during that period. We're going to have to just be working with residents on that.
All right. That's kind of the second stage of what I was.
As far as that goes, because, you know, in order to get the data that we need to report to the state, we've got to make it some kind of an incentive for homeowners to, you know, not go away and say, okay, now I've got to redo my whole, clear out my whole basement in order to comply for this.
Right. Appearance.
Okay, we're on appearance. Okay, this is one that we've had.
Well, I kind of have a question about it. So, you're not doing this for a family living in a house. Why do it for two families living in a house? Like, You're not going to say you can't live there because the windows are on the right side. You don't do that now. Why would you do that?
Well, at the time that the building was offered a condition or a certificate of occupancy, it was approved at that time. So we won't want to make him go in and make changes if it's approved at that
well,
time.
Well, if I sell a house, I don't have to get a new CO to buy a house. Like, I can buy a junk house and nobody stops me.
But your CO is not covering an accessory apartment, it's covering a single family dwelling.
Different building code standards.
Yeah.
And so, also, if you do sell the house and you call it a four bedroom instead of a two, you can.
Right.
You break the law, those bedrooms aren't legal bedrooms.
That's right.
So, kind of, this isn't any different.
So, I'm going to get down into the weeds here and I apologize, but there's two. There's two different types of apartments. There's an accessory apartment and then there's a supplementary apartment in the building code. And this is how it was explained to me, was that an accessory apartment can be what we consider an accessory apartment, but it can also be just a shared area. So imagine a widow that lives in a big home by herself that wants to rent out a room. That could be an accessory apartment. It doesn't there could be shared facilities. A supplementary apartment is what we consider an accessory apartment here, in that it's two separate living areas connected by a door on the inside. The building code for a supplementary apartment, the latter one, is much more stringent than it is for the prior one, the former, in that if you have a supplementary apartment, you have to have separate ductwork. You have to have fire-rated protection walls on the inside between the units. Essentially, it's a duplex. We're trying, like when I say that we're trying to make it easier for people that have accessory apartments to register them and not feel like they have to go back and retrofit their homes with, you know, thousands of dollars worth of upgrades, we're calling them accessory apartments. You can still have the separate living areas, but this also incorporates somebody that wants to just rent out one room, saying we'll have a shared living room and a shared kitchen. That's what our current code is. Because if it's the former, then we are requiring people to go back in and do those changes that are quite aggressive inside, as far as remodeling.
Which won't happen.
And that goes back to the problem is they won't do it, and then we won't have any, and then we won't have anything to report to the state. We won't have a moderate income housing plan.
Why don't we continue so you don't have to keep standing there? We'll discuss.
So we'll go ahead down to the entrances. An accessory apartment may have a dedicated entrance that is located on the side or rear of a single family home or at the front of the home if it is below grade and maintains the characteristics of a single family home. So this is where we want to maintain it. We've got, for instance, a two-family home that had two front doors on the front, and we didn't have anything in our code that prohibited the two front doors at the time. We weren't aware that it was going to be an accessory apartment, and then later decided to do an accessory apartment. So this will address that issue. So that won't be, it'll maintain that feel of a single-family home and not a duplex type of a home look. The other one is addresses. So the principal dwelling unit on the accessory apartment, so this will change in our code where it has to have the same addressing on the house. So this will change from the main building will be A, so say 104A versus the apartment will be 104B. So these will be on the front of the building, especially for emergency vehicles. If they can find the home quickly, if the homeowners are there, they're able to determine where the house is in need.
A question about that, though. How do you have to have both addresses on the home, even though the entrance may be in the back?
Right. So this is mainly, like I say, for emergency vehicles. When they first drive up to the residence, they can see that there's two residents at the home, and that they can find that quickly.
But they won't know which address is that.
Like, but if they're responding to a B, they know that they're looking for an accessory apartment rather than the main dwelling.
Yeah, that's why the main one will be a B, will be an accessory.
So you would have the number and an A and B, and then an A at the doors and a B at the door, and then they have.
We haven't required that in our code yet. I mean, that's.
Yes, though. You're correct.
So would you happen to have, or be able to find some pictures and examples of this so that we know what we're talking about?
Can.
That'd be helpful.
So, I mean, many people put beautiful numbers on their home that they're the only ones who know they're there. They like blend in with the landscape and they have no idea. I mean, some cities that require, this is my son's Eagle project right now, my ward, I have an expert on this, you know, painting on a street curb. There's like a business, and people still come around even in our neighborhood every few years, just painting a white rectangular box with a number right there. I don't know if that's fairly cheap and easy way to do it. And then it's actually uniform where people know where it is, because if it's at night and you have some ornamental thing up on your house, people have absolutely.
You're right.
Well, I mean, let's say the visible location, but maybe there should be additional language around this visible as location. I don't know how to word that. Or you're right, sometimes you go looking for a house and there's an address on the house someplace, but you can't find anything. I think it's fine the way it is, but it doesn't cover.
No, there is none.
Right.
All preference.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's in CCNRs, but it's not city code, and the city doesn't enforce CCNRs.
Yeah.
But you're right.
Okay. And then under interior access, this is interior access between the main living area and the accessory apartment must be maintained. That's pretty set forth. The next one is size limitation. We didn't want to do that. It may not exceed 600 feet. Some cities have gone to that portion. We just wanted to be where it couldn't contain less than 300 feet. 300 feet is not that much for to have your own eating, sleeping, and sanitation facilities. I mean, that's pretty small. So we wanted to get some kind of less than 300 square feet and access specifications for international residential buildings. We want to make sure that they meet the policy, especially when they're building.
You said some shared area. So that certainly would include the shared area?
No, it wouldn't. In those cases, it would just be the room itself being rented out.
Okay.
Can we specify that in the code?
Yeah.
So we're writing that this does not include room only and shared common areas. I'm not sure if that gets the wording, but I'm not clear on that. And so, on the interior access, you're saying you may have a separate entrance, but you have to be able from the inside to be able to get through, so it can't be physically separated from the inside?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, otherwise it's a duplex.
Yeah,
we're
going to change it to that separate.
So, yes, you're right.
Okay, the next one is owner-occupied, and this is pretty straightforward. It just pretty much spells it out a little bit more than what we have in the code. So no accessory apartment shall be created or occupied in a single home unless the owner of the property occupies the main dwelling. For the purpose of this section, the term owner-occupied shall be defined as a full-time residency within the home by a bona fide property owner as shown on the Utah County Tax Assessment Cost. So they can't be a part-time helper and rent out for this. The upstairs apartment and then again when that is so they need to be owner.
Well, why?
We want to maintain that single family.
I know we want to, but you know, if somebody owns three houses, it would be taking it.
But it's not in that case, you're thinking of me owning three homes in the city and renting them out? Because that's different.
Having two families in two of those homes because they happen to have accessory apartment type facilities.
We're trying, okay, so this is actually a very common code in,
yeah,
in cities.
I can speak to experience.
No, I get that.
Because otherwise you are creating essentially duplexes. In order to, but I also think that requiring the home to be owner occupied also mitigates a lot of the nuisance violations that we see in neighborhoods where rentals occur. And that's just speaking honestly.
I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm just making sure that.
On the taking issue, I don't think that it's a taking issue because you're not taking from them the right to occupy a single family home as a single family. So I don't see it as a taking issue. I would defer to the attorney on that one. Because you're not denying them the right that they initially the primary use of the home.
Well, let's say that you've been renting to a family for a while, and the same thing happens to them that happens to you. Their kids move out, and there happens to be a space that could be rented to someone else, and you're not living in the home. You can't do that, is what you're saying.
You can rent to one family if it's not owner-occupied. You can still rent out your home, so that's why I say it's still not a taking, because you can still enjoy the primary use of the home.
I'd like us to consider expanding the definition of owner. To include dependents of the owner, legal partner, spouse, of that nature. In other words, if I own a house, my son lives in the house, I still want to have an accessory apartment. I don't live there. My name's on the title, but my dependent lives there. One of my siblings lives there. Maybe my mom lives there. It could, but I'd like to extend owner occupied to include dependents and legal
immediate family.
That's a really slippery slope.
Well, I think you can justify immediate family.
I think that cuts against the policy concern of having an owner occupied in the first place.
I agree.
Let me just throw this scenario out. Couple empty nester goes on their mission. They already have an accessory apartment. They have their kids come live in the home, but they're not charging them rent. Not owner occupied though, is it? So they couldn't do that. What if they're not charging their kids rent for living in primary facility?
If it's kid, it's not applicable anyway, because if it's immediate family, it's, you don't need the accessory apartment anyway.
Now she's saying that the accessory apartment was already occupied by an unrelated.
Okay.
Right. And they're renting it out.
Well, now that you mentioned that, so that's my son. So my son is newlywed wife in her basement, and my newlywed daughter-in-law's sister upstairs, and grandma's on a mission for 2 years. So two different family members living in the house.
And it's going to be really common here because of missionaries.
Still, in that case, they're still family members.
Yeah, they're still.
But you said that wasn't allowed.
But they're not on the tax rolls.
They're not the
owner. As the owner occupied on the tax rolls. So that's what I'm saying is we expand the owner occupied to include.
Can I also get some more clarity? Like, what's the enforcement here? So let's say, because there are rental houses in Cedar Hill who have many more than two unrelated people in them that are being rented out, some separate entrances. And so how are we enforcing this?
So they can have up to four unrelated individuals living in a household. So we've actually come across some that has five college students that will be living mm-hmm. here. I do go out and do enforce that. I send them a letter stating that they do have to comply with city hall with the family definition. So that is being followed at home. And mostly it's an informative letter while they comply. Typically they do comply, sometimes they do not. So, but typically they really have to, I haven't had a lot of pushback from that.
But under this proposed code, you could revoke the conditional use permit.
You can revoke the conditional use permit, and with
currently none of it's recorded, so you don't even know.
With most
until somebody complains.
Well, with most violations of a city code, it's a Class B misdemeanor. And that would be issued by American Fork Police Department, whoever we contract with.
And that's to the owner, not the residents, correct?
Yeah.
It would be the property owner.
So, I'm not hearing any endorsement of my idea for running this corner.
I think it's great because there are a lot of couple missionaries here who may have that situation.
Yeah, and maybe we can include something to say a temporary type
yes.
of a...
I mean, maybe a two-year waiver or something just to fit that specific three-year, yeah, if you're in there.
I still think there are, I have to say this carefully, there are some people that they occupy a house, their name's not on the title, but they live there. Grandma, she's 90 years old, and the title's in the son's name because he bought the house for her or something like that, and maybe it doesn't have an accessory apartment in that house, well, it can't do it, right? Because the owner is not grandma, he's 90 years old. So I just think there's circumstances where we're not taking into account some of these family situations that exist. So I don't have the answer to that. I'm just saying that it seems like we need to broaden it a little bit more. And believe me, I personally, when I bought my house, it was a single family dwelling neighborhood, and that's how we still had it. So I'm all a believer of single family dwellings. I don't want accessory apartments next to me.
If you've ever, have apartments down in Caldwell, and believe me, the tenants do not take near as good care of the apartments as they
Right, but there's basic code enforcement, but you can't make someone have their home be beautiful. Like you can say it has to be maintained, it has to be clean, you know, the grass cut, but aside from that, you can't say, I'm sorry, you can't make it look, well used, and that's part of the deal, and you can't say you can't rent properties because that's totally
wrong. We're not saying that they can't rent the property, it would just be the accessory.
But what if it's already happened, and let's say, because people do, they own 10 or 15 of these, and they've already been using the accessory apartment, we're just going to shut that down. And then it becomes a non-viable.
If they've got 15 homes in the city, and they're renting each home to two separate families and to two separate units, yeah, we will. Because that doesn't even comply with current code. I would say that we would
basically prohibiting people buying a single family dwelling house and putting it in the
duplex. Correct.
Yeah.
That's exactly it.
I mean, for the record, I appreciate the conversation. I agree with the language that we're reviewing tonight. I think it should be owner occupied if they're already have an accessory apartment. If they own multiple dwellings, then those can be rented to a single family as defined in our code.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Can't turn multiple.
You can't sublet your home.
You can sublet your own home.
Your own home.
I guess. The one you occupy, but not your other homes that you may own. And I like it the way it's written.
I heard Drake's good day to be
safe.
Yeah. There's a public policy concept that you want to be able to have people keep their homes. They might go through some financial troubles or people moving in and out or issues or other things. So the idea is that if you own the home, you're in it, you should be allowed to rent a portion out of it, to do it. So there's kind of this public policy that, you don't want neighborhood and people losing their homes because they can't do it, so renting it is kind of the idea. But and that's that kind of person is treated differently than someone who is just owns solely for rental purposes. They don't have the attachment to the home. They're treated just like an investor type. While a person who's renting out a portion of their home is treated more favorably, simply because they're part of the community, you don't want them to lose their home.
And that's the concept. Whether that's valid or not, I don't know. But there is, you're right, legally a distinction. People who own the home are treated differently than an investor. And that's a valid argument we could you know, argue about. But but historically, in many cities, do. I think that's probably something you may agree with.
I do agree with that. One of the examples that we have is one of the homes in Cedar Hills was turned into a frat house. And, you know, all sorts of things happen at this frat house. They cut drugs, alcohol, and it does have a considerable impact on neighboring homes around there. We want it to track from there. We want to keep it as a single family. My owner occupied, I think that attracts that atmosphere. Be able to do that.
I'm sorry, we're getting so wordsmithing here. You're doing great. Main dwelling. Use the term main dwelling here. I think that's not defined well. If it is the widow who has her grandson and his wife move in, maybe she lives in the smaller portion and they live in the main portion because they're bigger.
You could just strike out Maine.
Okay. Actually, that's exactly what my sister is saying. She lives on the upper, and the middle lives in the basement.
Does that resolve that concern, John?
Yeah, no, that would be great. That would be perfect.
So just strike Maine out?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's further go down to occupancy. Occupancy of the ADU accessory dwelling unit shall be limited to 2 persons per bedroom with a maximum of 4 people.
So even if there were 3 bedrooms, still 4 people max?
Yeah, 4
mm-hmm.
people would be max.
That seems high to me. Granted, I'm used to dealing with Provo where they're limited to 3, but where we're requiring 2 off-street parking, the potential of having 4 adult, unrelated individuals with 4 separate vehicles, that seems excessive.
Well, this is our current code, is the 4. This is typically what we already have. I'm just spelling out a little bit different. One of the things to consider, too, is I had a situation probably about 3 years ago that a couple had a baby, and then they had 2 existing children already. And I had a neighbor call, I couldn't believe it, and said that they wanted him out of the unit because they had a child.
Well, but you could fix that by saying 1 family or 3 unrelated.
I'm okay with that.
I like that. That's good. Because I wonder with 4 unrelated if you have 2 couples. When we had our 3rd child, we were forced out of our apartment. We had to either go into a 3-bedroom apartment or buy a house. Buying a house while we're only halfway through college. We had 3 kids, that was a lot. And we didn't want it, but it was a big deal to us financially, but we applied it to law because we wanted to continue growing our family. This is what's being suggested here is more lenient than that, as long as it's a single family. They can occupy the accessory dwelling or 3 unrelated adults. I'm watching in my own neighborhood as families split apart in order to hold on to the home. Some of these rules, frankly, are being broken by how many unrelated people are together.
Now, I don't think this is inconsistent with the other part of the code either, because that's talking about 4 individuals occupying the whole home versus an accessory apartment.
So I guess this is where we go for the definition of
family. We'll have to review that.
Yeah.
But I think, and I might be getting ahead of myself, is that additionally, I think language can be added to parking that says that at no time shall the number of parking or cars on premises be less than the number of parking stalls provided. So if you have, let's say you have 4 unrelated individuals, well, you have 5 cars and 4 unrelated individuals, well, you have to have you have to have 5 parking spaces. Because that's when it spills into the street is typically when we get the call.
That's what's going to be the biggest concern for neighbors.
Parking.
Parking.
Yeah, but a family with 8 kids may have 10 cars, so that's...
Right.
If they're living in an accessory apartment, God bless them.
And that's our biggest complaint right now is the parking for accessory apartments. And especially if they've got so many individuals in there,
they're trying to tab park on the street. It crosses over into the sidewalk areas, and then, you know, of course, I get a call on those.
And the snow plows can't function.
The snow plows can't function.
We've even seen them park on lawns.
That's what's next. Park on the lawns.
So I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of you, Jenny.
Oh, no, that's okay. All right, so we'll review the occupancy on that one to some different verbiage on this one. Okay, so the next one we're going down to is house separate utilities. The reason for this, 1 meter gas and electric utility service, we need to retain that into the owner. And what this does is protect the city if, say, a renter skips out and leaves. It doesn't make the city holding the bag. It's the property owner's responsibility, and they work that out with the tenants or when they contract to decide to do it, but it takes it out of the city's responsibility. And then we're going down to the next one, which is parking. Like I say, a minimum of 2 off-street parking spaces in addition to those already required for the single-family home. Additional spaces provided, as Chandler was saying, as needed to assure that all additional occupants' vehicles will be accommodated on site. It says no spaces may be located within the front or side yard except within an approved driveway. Tandem parking is allowed within a driveway to meet those requirements. Like I say, again, as long as they're not encroaching on the sidewalks. That's the big one.
So I think that 2 cars in the garage, 2 cars behind them, 2 cars behind them, that's fine.
Yeah, if they're not blocking the sidewalk. You can do that right now.
I wouldn't want to park my car in any of those places, but no. Yeah, it's legal.
Where it says accommodate on site, I think there needs to be something about off street introduced there. Or else people will say it's on site.
Right in front of the house.
Yes.
We can
so
do that.
So we need to protect just no off street parking allowed for tenants. Now, this wouldn't apply to visitors that came to Bill Brown. This would just be for the tenants.
So on street.
Or excuse me, on street.
Do we, I believe this current code permits on street parking for a short duration.
Our parking code does allow for 48 hours.
48 hours.
Unless it's winter hours.
So technically one could perpetually park on the street. Because 48 hours we go to work every day, you park it in.
It's
for winter when it's snow.
Can't control everything.
Perpetually, you can park legally on the street. All your long hauls, right?
Just
so.
You know, we did have a situation where they said that they moved their vehicle 2 inches or whatever, and they were complying at that state. But we did, if you look at our code and our parking, it'll say the frontage of the property. So any portion in the frontage of the property is considered where the vehicle has been moved. So technically, they can be taken it.
What if they move it once within 48 hours?
In 48 hours, if it's in a different location, then I can't take it.
Everybody does it.
So, but typically, we rarely ticket a vehicle unless they're being obstinate or the vehicle's been tagged more than 2 or 3 times. Then it becomes an issue or a nuisance at that point. So I try to give them the benefit of the doubt as much as possible.
For the record, I got ticketed once by a previous city enforcement official. I pulled in late one night from a camping trip and left my truck and trailer on the street. So I didn't want to back it up to my driveway and had to get one.
Poor baby.
Well, that was before my time.
Yeah.
It sounds like there's going to be some revisions to this. Should we vote to have this?
I envision
this. Revisions done and then brought back to us?
Well, it's up to us, right? We can table this.
We're almost done. We can bring the changes back.
I was going to be a spot of table it until the next time.
Yeah, I'd like to see another graph. That's what I would like to see.
That's just a motion. I mean, you can make that motion if you want.
Well,
let's just do a real quick finish.
We are so close. So. In fact, M will actually be changed because of the conditional use permit. It doesn't actually run with the property owner, it runs with the property. So actually, that one will change to a possible registration fees instead of conditional use permit.
Okay.
So, and then the last one is not intended for sale. The accessory apartment, you cannot sell a portion of your house off. It has to be intended for the apartment.
Okay, word. It says it's not intended for sale. What if they didn't intend to sell it, but then, oh, we got an emergency, I'm selling, because I have to sell it really fast. Can anybody use that? I'd just rather say not permitted.
Sale of the unit is not permitted.
Yeah. Accessory apartment can't be sold. Separately. Not sold.
Cannot be sold.
We can reword that.
Okay.
Yeah. I want that to be strong. And then there is an O, right?
Okay, and then there's just exceptions at the very back. So, and basically this has to do with existing accessory apartments. It would include section C, which would be the building permit. E would be the entrances that are already established, and L is the parking, where it's already been approved previously. So those are our changes to your accessory apartments, and we'll go ahead and revise these and come back with you.
Okay, I make one additional request. Okay.
Absolutely.
I understand this is changing from the current. Can we outline what the changes are? The reason I'm asking, I understand we're trying to write our code so we can claim.
If you go to the first page,
that's our code.
Crossed out, that's all that we have written.
That's it. And we do have some indefinite.
So we just struck it out and started
the red line. All the red lines, the new stuff.
Right? All the red's the new stuff.
Which is this little typo with all exceptions is not so great.
Yeah, and we want this to retrofit our code. I mean, so we want to make the correct changes to this.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's all we have right now.
Yeah, I think it's really inadequate.
Should we have some kind of grace period written into this so that people have a year or two to comply, because there's a lot of people complying already? So, like, it's not an immediate boom, you're done, your income source dries up and you're in trouble. Like, there's got to be some kind of gradual introduction.
I agree with that. I just don't think it's clarified. I think as a policy, it should be established that we have a sunset date on.
I think when you do, we're going to have a public notice on this when we change the code, correct?
Correct.
Well, so we did it tonight.
But there will be another one.
But there will be another one with the revised council.
No.
No?
City council.
Okay. So.
You can allow public comment, but we're not going to notice another public hearing.
Okay.
But there will be another public hearing with the city council.
I move that we...
So, before you make a motion, I just want to, for the record, Lori and Spear had to leave the meeting.
Got it.
And Jared, you're now voting.
Glad I stayed.
Yes. So, Jared Anderson's now voting member tonight. Go ahead.
I move that we table item 7. I move that we table item number 8, the recommendation on the proposed amendment to the City of Elk Municipal Code 10-5-32 related to accessory apartments, and we will review any subject to the changes to staff's comments.
There a second?
Second.
I'll second it. Any discussion before you vote? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, last item on the agenda.
I'm going to be fast. Do this in 30 seconds.
Discussion on smoke shops, vape shops, and retail tobacco, especially businesses in the SC1 commercial zone. State code allows municipalities to take stricter stances on tobacco, specialty retail shops. Recently, we had an application that fell through. It wasn't even an application, it was a discussion with a potential leaser. The city would like to take a stance similar to what Washington City did in southern Utah and
prohibit the set, prohibit tobacco sales from retail businesses outright. A tobacco specialty business is a business that 35% of the sale of its goods comes from the sale of tobacco.
So it's and related, and related.
Yeah. So this wouldn't affect like a gas station or Walmart. You can still sell tobacco products, but these ones there's already limitations on where they can be. And quite frankly, if we adopt this plan where there's a park in the middle of our commercial zone, park is considered a community space, which would then prohibit tobacco specialty retail business from being in even that zone or even in that development.
Because there's a distance.
It's from the entrance to the building to the nearest property.
Public space, right?
Public space. Well, they define
community. What about proximity? Isn't there proximity to schools? School as
yes,
well?
Yes, yes.
And that's the corner of Long Beach is pretty close.
That's why we're not having a discussion with them anymore.
So this is by name they are not a permitted activity today.
No, it's not.
So just why do we have to have a ban? It's not permitted already.
I think it would be covered under conditional use, which means it's permitted with conditions.
Well, you could make the case that it's a goods store or they sell to retail business. It's a weak case, it's a stretch, but I think that by just having clear language that says we're not permitting tobacco specialty businesses in the city, it's just done. We don't have to have the conversation. Well, I fit into this use and not this use category. You're putting me in the wrong bucket. It's simply, you're this, it's that one.
I mean, we already have the prohibitions against like
now we're on prohibition with limitations. Believe it or not, a city cannot outright ban them. You can just restrict them in a way that makes
it uncomfortable. Yeah.
That's where I'm going with my thought process. If we're unable to ban that particular industry, how can we ban
the state code allows us to.
So the state code
says, and I'll read this to you, the regulation of retail tobacco specialty business is an exercise of the police powers of the state and through delegation to other governmental entities, that's us. So it says in section 5, right in the code, it says, a municipality may not issue a license to a retail tobacco specialty business if it's located within 1,000 feet of community location, could be a church, a school, a playground. But it goes on to say, this is the important part, is that nothing in this section requires a municipality to issue a business license to a retail tobacco specialty business.
So, if this is state code already, doesn't this
already have? We're adopting the more stringent manner.
I think it avoids having this discussion.
I don't
should
have
every
to have
time.
A conversation with the proposed business owner.
Yeah. Okay, this is a discussion item. Is there anybody here that would support having these in our city? So speak up.
You need some proposed code.
There is a proposed code. There's Washington code. Washington City's code is there. It was adopted last month. I like the code. And so, in an effort to not reinvent the wheel, I mean, there's a few sections that
the whereases don't really apply to us.
Well, the whereases are just part of the resolution that are adopted. But there's a couple sections that don't apply because they have some that are existing. Mm-hmm. But in order to curb the demand, they're saying no more. So we would adopt pertinent portions that apply to some of this. So,
I'm totally fine with that.
All right, that's
just a much hard to get back to the days of selling beer on Sundays.
Sell beer on Sundays, but not tobacco on it.
Not talking about Okay, so do I have a motion to adjourn this meeting?
So, I'll second.
And all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? I think the public was sticking it out.
Stuck out.
I just can't imagine who's adding.